Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast, brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora te whānau, nau mai, welcome in this week. Arrow FM whānau, Wairarapa TV. But I welcome in whānau with a bit of a chin wag this morning. Just before I get into the main kaupapa mō te rānei, morena kaz. Just before I get into all that whānau, I'll just open this up with a quick karakia. Ha whakataka te hauki te uri, whakataka te hauki, whakataka te hauki te tonga, kia mākina ki naki uta, kia mātaratara ki tau ehia, kia ana te atakura he tio, he huka, he hauhu, tihei, mauri o rā. A tēnā tātou, morena whānau, nau mai, it's good to be back this week. This week's program, I'm going to play a recording that is done by my sister in Australia, and this recording is just it's just from my sister's lens, having siblings in addiction from an early age. And just the fight that she's had for the last 30 years. It's really her lens, her story, being the sister, being my sister, really. I like to share this because we feel this pūdake or this message here is for people in addiction, for my whānau, all my cousins who... still pretending, that's pretty much what it is. They don't have the tools, or they don't know how to navigate themselves through that process. We hope this recording of my sis is able to help you, my whānau, because addiction chews you up eventually. Eventually, the damage due to your hinengaro, your body, through addiction, it chews your whole wairua up, your hinengaro, and ka rere atu, or whakaro, or maori. And you just disconnected from yourself. So before I go into that, I just wanted to say that at 10:45 we've got an alarm drill going off, so at 10:45, kapi, tō tātou, program mō te rā, and then... I just want to quickly talk about. Oh, if I've got time, I just want to encourage everybody that our hikoi. I understand that there's something in play. I want to encourage everybody to get involved. This hikoi, it's not about making noise. I mean, we made noise last time, and there's not much of a follow up afterwards. And it's the responsibility is not left for the iwi to round us all up, you know. If we want to make noise, if we want our whenua and we want our maori back, well, they never took it. But them to understand that, we got to be a part of this, not just say it, not just put post up, not just do comments. We need to be a part of this hikoi, even tangata tiriti. They're probably making a lot of moves themselves, and they're not even us. But, that's all about that. Also, tomorrow, just before I play this recording, Saturday the 2nd, on Saturday the 2nd of November, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m, at Whai Ora, there's another pop-up clinic. There we go. There's another pop-up clinic there, whānau. At Whai Ora, the lovely nurses there, immunisation, blood tests, blood pressure, CVRA, health education, sexual education. We got it all at Whai Ora, whānau. No. Ka te. Anyway, if you've got time, sit back and listen to this, this interview of my sister. It's my baby sister. We were brought up here, out Tiki Village, from the hood down the east side. We're both whakapapa to Tumapu here, Papa Uma. Our mum's heart was always on. Oh, she was Tuturu Tiku Village, but her heart's always homeward. That was my mum's words. Anyway, kick back and this gets too heavy. Just disengage. But this is from my sister's lens and from her. Views as a sibling in addiction.
Welcome to Soberly Speaking. I'm Julia Rangihiuia. Today's guest is the beautiful Jasmine, or Jazz, as I call her throughout the episode. Jazz is a bit different from all of my interviews, as she lived with addiction through not one, but two of her siblings. She lived with it under the same roof. She went to juvenile correctional facilities with them, visiting them in jail, watching them throughout the years deal with the law because of their addiction, and she now raises their children for them. Jazz and I connected through a Facebook post that I put out in a little group called Maldives of Sydney. And out of all of the people who wrote to me, she's the only person who actually came through with the interview and who agreed to talk to us and to be filmed at the same time. In the Polynesian culture, talking about addiction is still very taboo. So I'm so grateful for Jazz. This is an amazing story, a story of resilience, a story of tenacity, but overall a story of love. This is part one of two of my interview with Jazz. I hope you enjoy this chat. Jazz, I have been so excited to interview you because you are the first person who, you yourself don't have an alcohol or drug addiction, but you've lived with it through siblings. What is your earliest memory of your siblings and their drug and alcohol use?
I'd probably say around maybe eight years old. And then as I grew up to understand, I can remember the times I used to get in cars with my mum to look for my siblings. And at the time, you know, we were like, oh, we're just going for a ride. And this can be random hours of the day or night. And yeah, so that's probably the earliest memories of it. Going into, like, you know, I'm talking about King's Cross now, at 8 years old, it's not really somewhere. And back in those days, a little bit different to these days, that's when it was pretty rough up in those days. But we used to look everywhere, you know, from wherever we could go, wherever my mum knew that they would be, that's where we were at the, you know, from that age. It's probably the earliest memory that I can think.
So you're 8 years old doing these things. How old are they?
So they are five years older than me. So I'm in my 40s now. So they were 5 years older than me. And then that was my brother. Then my sister was 3 years older than me.
So they're 13 and 8.
Yeah.
And you're looking for them in suburbs like King's Cross in the 90s, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
This was.
Yeah, yeah.
How does your mum put two and two together? Were they always quite naturally, I want to use adventurous, and I use that very lightly.
Yep.
Were they always a bit rebellious?
To be honest, that's probably one that I kind of can't put my finger on to exactly. You know, I guess a mum just knows, maybe. Mm. It's probably the best way to put it. But, yeah, they, again, at that age, I just think that my mum knew what they were doing and where they were at. Mm. Yeah.
How does that affect you as a child? Because that's got to do something to your subconscious brain, right? And then your family unit as a whole.
Yeah, I think, and as, again, I'm gonna pull it back to as the woman that I am today, I always remembered our mum from a very young age always reminding us, no matter where in the world that you are, whether your siblings, because they, you know, become, not only that, were they drug addicts, they were incarcerated and all that kind of stuff. And she's always reminded us, no matter where we are or what they do, to always love them. So I think that memory has stayed with me to this day. And I think when it comes to the whole family unit, I mean, it's just hand in hand. When you have drugs, when you have alcohol, when you have, you know, incarceration and all that kind of stuff, obviously, it has some kind of effect on the family, and again, young. I'm not quite sure what it is, but I always, and I probably believe this myself as a young age, I was so close to my mum going through all of this stuff. I felt like I had grown up a lot faster than a lot of other kids of my age. And I understood a lot more, especially when it came to that kind of stuff, because we were in the mix of it. And I don't know, as I grew up, let's be real, I could have taken that same path. You know, I could have copied, because that's, you know, that's the influences that I had as a young child, as older siblings. That's what I was raised with. And there's any point in time I could have literally flicked that switch and gone that same way. But I'm not quite sure what it was. I just, yeah, I kind of just got through it. But I always knew at around about 13 that I didn't want to go through that. And I didn't want my younger sister to go through that either. So it was quite clear from that age what I did and what I didn't want to do. Wasn't a perfect child, you know, made many mistakes, some definitely not proud of, but I'm just grateful that I never went down that path that we kind of lived through.
Mm. Yeah. You're 8 years old, you're still going to primary school. When do you clock that, oh, my friends aren't in the car looking through for my siblings who might be on drugs or alcohol in King's Cross? When did that kind of click for you?
Probably I would say around 10, I reckon, because, you know, you're still, 8 is still kind of just enjoying the rides, right? And again, it was just like we're going for a drive. But we knew that we were looking, you know, because my mum was like, oh, just look at that side and I'll look this side, that kind of stuff. And I knew that we were looking for them, but I didn't quite understand exactly why we were looking for them. But, yeah, probably around 10 years old, you know, when you start to, the friendships start to, you know, be formed, and then you get to go to other with friends and their families, and you realise pretty fast that they're a little bit different to us, or we're different to them. And yeah, it was probably around about 10.
Jazz, did you hold any resentment towards them, or do you still now, as an adult, for maybe not having a childhood, a normal childhood? I'm using air quotes, everyone.
No, and again, I put that down to our mother. Like I said, I get quite emotional when it comes to this, but I think if it wasn't for her, that could be very different. And because, like I said, from a very young age, she just kept saying to us, you know, doesn't matter, you know, because let's be real, sometimes it can get embarrassing at a young age. I mean, I know people that still suffer as adults, you know, when they have family members who are either, you know, addicts of whatever form that may be, they get quite embarrassed about it. I think because we've grown up around it, and again, my mother just kept reminding us of it. Yes, there were times where it was a little bit embarrassing, but I think, like I said, I think for us, not so much resentment. I did always look at other people and think, why couldn't I have that as an older brother or an older sister? Why could I not have that kind of influence, or why couldn't they do the things that I see other people doing? That kind of, I'm not going to lie, that was kind of, I thought that quite a few times. But again, it's just one of those things, we just got by with how we were, and that's just how we were.
Your amazing mother, Dion, it sounded like she tried to protect you for as long as she could, you know, just saying, we're going to go for a ride and you look that way, I look that way. Was there a point where, like, there was fighting in the home, so she couldn't protect you guys from what was really going on, or was it an open secret?
No. So obviously, if anyone knows anything about addiction, especially drug addiction, behaviours come from that, whether it be inside or outside of the home. So that, you know, we often seen a lot of things that a lot of kids probably never have seen, and I hope that, you know, a lot of kids never see it. But, you know, there was always that yelling, the fighting, the, you know, the behaviours of an addict always outplayed within the home. I guess for me, I'm just grateful that we had the mum that we had. And through her, just watching her, even going through that kind of stuff, you know, just seeing how she was able to balance, although it was never perfect, but she was able to balance, you know, you're having younger kids, so you still had to look after them, plus you had two kids in active addiction, work and then part-time work, obviously, to try and manage, you know, because you can't exactly have a job and then say, I need to go because police are ringing you up and you need to look for your kids, something like that. So I think having a mum like that to be able to manage stuff like that, it gave me a bit of a, as crazy as it sounds, a bit of a head start in life.
In our culture, in Polynesian culture, I've found it very difficult to interview someone. Mm. And I think it is still quite taboo and still very fuckama, still very shameful. Growing up in that type of environment, did you feel shame or did you feel any sense of rejection from your extended family, or was it quite commonplace that everyone was kind of having their own trials and tribulations but no one speaks about it?
I think it's the whole no one speaks about it, yet they probably have the same going on in their own backyard. And we did get, you know, frowned upon, I guess the best word to use, because we had siblings in active addiction. And, you know, a lot of times we went places and you could feel people either looking or, I guess, it's probably judging. But it became normal to us. We kind of become accustomed to it.
I want to take it back to your siblings and growing up. When did the law get involved?
I would probably say for my siblings, it was around about 13, I guess it was. So it's still quite young. You know, you're just coming out of that childhood, getting into the teenage years. Probably around about 13, you know, it started off small things like stealing stuff and stuff like that. Running away and then being found, you know, probably in not the greatest of environments or with the greatest of influence people around. It probably started around then.
And what does that look like? Does that look just paddy wagon or going to juvie?
It was a lot of obviously paddy wagons, a lot of trips for my mum to go into the police stations to get them. And this could be, like I said, we lived in inner Sydney at that time. And so from there, my mum could go anywhere in Sydney to get them wherever they landed. It probably started like that, but then it soon escalated to juvenile justice centres at probably 14. So it wasn't, from that 13 to 14, it escalated quite fast.
Do the police give you warnings, like the next time we find them, we're going to send them to juvie, or is it quite a sudden shift, or is your mum thanking the police every time they don't actually send them to juvie? What's the process?
So it was obviously, and I think it's much the same these days, they get a lot of warnings, you know, don't do that again, next time you're going to be put in juvenile justice and all this kind of stuff, kids be taken off you and all that kind of stuff. They do give warnings, but again, it depends on the crowd that they surrounded themselves with. Thankfully, none of us got taken away from my parents. So that's a plus for us. But unfortunately, we had to be separated by the choices that they made and then obviously incarceration.
Well, so are they both going to prison?
Yeah, so they both go at random times. And it's been like that throughout their whole lives.
So they're in and out of jail their whole lives. Was this just due to being caught with drugs, or what were the charges?
Yeah, so it was from stealing cars, from armed robbery, from intimidation. The list, like I said, we could be here all day, but it wasn't just, you know, stealing a bar of chocolate from the shop. It was some pretty big crimes that they had committed, yeah.
I have to ask something, and you can answer as honestly as you feel. Was your mum relieved to have them in one place and off the drugs? Was she relieved to have them in jail?
Yeah, 100%, because you knew where they were. You knew, although it can be unsafe at times, but you knew that they were safe, you knew they had a bed, you knew they had food. Might not be the best, but she knew where they were, and then she didn't have to go out or drag us out looking for them. So yeah, definitely. And I think that's probably a lot of parents these days who, you know, have children much the same, not knowing where they are in the world, even if they're dead or alive. And that's as crazy as that sounds, that's the realness of it. So being there, it definitely, you know, was a huge weight off her shoulders.
Tell me about the first time you visited them in prison, and who was there?
My mum, myself, I think my younger sister was there as well. We used to go and visit often, but we did try when they had the family days and stuff like that. We did try and go on those days especially, but we used to visit quite frequent. It was, like I said, it became the norm for us. So we used to go in, and I remember you used to have the big, like, metal detectors. I think it might have been, I don't know, if that what it, I think that's what they're called. And you had to take out everything from your pockets. Back then, I don't know if it's the same now, touch wood, but thankfully we never have to visit there again. But you used to only allow coins to use the in the vending machines to get snacks when you're inside. So you could only take coins there, or if you had like a drawing or something like that, you could take it, but you had to hand that over to them, I don't know, to check it over or something like that. Then you'd walk through the metal detectors and you wait on the other side, and then they bring the inmate out. Before they bring them out, they actually sit you on a certain chair or table, and that's where your family sit until your relative comes out, and you can see them coming out. Back then, walking through where they were walking through, then they just, you kind of just sit there for, I think it was like an hour back then. They had a playground back then for younger kids, and the inmates could take their kids, I don't know if they have it now, probably do, but to play with them for that hour whilst we were there. Then the hour finishes and obviously you say your goodbyes and they take the inmate away. And then you, once they've been locked back behind there and it's all clear, then you're let out and you do the same process but on the way out.
Wow. Your siblings must have been detoxing from drugs and alcohol whilst they were in there. Did you see a noticeable shift in them when you were visiting?
Yeah, so my mum, now that I think about it, she wouldn't take us probably for the first wee while, and I guess that's probably more because they were withdrawing. So I guess if anyone knows what that's like, it's not the greatest of sights to see. So now that I think about it as an adult, it's probably what she was trying to not let us see. But as we grew up, we did see a lot of it, the come downs, I guess you could say. So yeah, those times where we never really visited until they had pretty much withdrawn, which could be anywhere from a month or a bit longer, depending on what drugs they were using.
So they come out of jail, they've been in there a couple of years. How soon did they go back to their old lifestyle? Because you have said that they were in and out of jail their whole lives.
Yeah, sometimes it could be days. And then they would just go back.
Jazz, can I just, like, how heartbreaking?
Yeah.
Oh, how exhausting and heartbreaking. Sorry, go on.
So it was, you know, because when they're in there, they give you all the hope in the world. And you've got to have some kind of faith in them that, you know, what they're saying and what they're writing to you, great, you know, there's some light, they're going to come out and we're going to be that one family together again. And then they come out and, you know, kind of like they just seep back into that life before. And I guess that's just the bigger picture of exactly of what addiction is. And if you're not willing to do it 100%, there's always that 100% chance that you're actually just going to go right back where you come. That landed you back in there. Like I said, it could have been days, it could be months till they went back to that life.
Are they going back to stealing and robbing and doing their old crime? And is the justice system much less kind to them these times?
Yeah, no, I don't. Like I said, they takes them a long time for the law to catch up with them, and wow. You know, they give opportunity after opportunity. You know, obviously there's conditions when you get out. Most people. And they can, you know, they can break those conditions a number of times, yet still out on the street doing what they do, probably hurting or harming people, but yet that it's not enough for them to obviously be put back straight away. Mm. That's kind of where that sits.
At a certain age, does your mum ever just sit back and go, this is how they're made, they're both cut from the same cloth, I can't do anything, I have my hands up, or did she kind of fight for them and stay in that car searching for them up until the day she passed?
So yeah, you hit it on the head. My mum was a mother right until her last breath. And she fought. You know, even when us as kids, you know, as we grew up, we're like, Mum, you're wasting your time. Like, you know what I mean? They're adults now. They've been doing this for so long. You know, enough is enough. Because we could see the toll that it also took on our mum. And I guess being on the other side of addiction where we're not in addiction, we can see it from both lenses, I guess you could say. And we often said to our mum, you know, no, just enough is enough. Just let them go. That's what they want to do. Is that if that's the life that they want to live, that's them, you know. But again, we were just lucky.
Does that work? Morena, does that work? You're telling me this, right? Thank you.
Gee.
Right. Have, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Finally, kia ora, kia ora. Welcome in. Hey, look at that. Didn't have the mic on. Yee, ka whai. Anyway, welcome back. Finally, we got my sister in, Jasmine. It's my baby sister. So on the weekend, you would have seen us have our live kōrero, our paku kōrero around my sister's lens as a sister who had to live through addictive siblings, myself being one, and our baby sister. Since then, sis has had a few fun. So we're not naming names and that, but what we'll do is we'll come on and answer the questions that our whānau would like to answers around, and hopefully in that process we're able to bloody drop the right seeds at the right moment on all my cousins in addiction. Yeah, even their whānau. Nō reira, sis, before we start, please introduce yourself to the hāpuri. Kia ora.
Mihia te whānau. My name is Jazz. I obviously was born and raised in the Wairarapa, but I reside here in Koihākina. I am a mama to our sister's children, so I've got three. My oldest is 16, then I have a 10-year-old, and then our baby is 7. My husband, as most would probably know, he is Tongan. And yeah, that's pretty much us in a nutshell. Might be some cracked nuts, but that's us.
Kia ora. Awesome. So just to follow up on our live, you've had a couple of pātoi. So one of them was around being a sibling, I guess, the jail. Was it what they wanted to hear more of? The lens from...
I think ever since we done our live the other day, and since the podcast has actually come out, I guess one thing, it wasn't really for me to kind of come into this space. Hei aha, when you get some pātai like that, it's obviously a key for whānau who are... Actually, not just whānau, there was randoms who I don't know from a bar of soap who have actually reached out, who's on a very similar journey or is currently going into that space. So, I had a lot of questions come through on how did we navigate the incarceration side of things when we were growing up. Then that then led into a lot of pātai that I got through was obviously courts and systems. Family services, that come up as well. And I guess I'll kind of just briefly go through it. Obviously, yes, as I've mentioned, and before I mention it, when I have these kind of kōreros, I always make sure that my kids are aware that I'm about to speak on this, because it's not just me. When these things go out on social media, it is also my kids that that obviously... are subject to this kind of thing. So before, there was some people that were like, oh, these people are saying, you know, what about these kids? I've always been the type of person that I will never speak out a term, especially if one of my kids say no, then it's a no. I need all of them to kind of be in agreement. So before I start on that, for people that might need to know that, it is not just my journey, it is my kids, and I'm very mindful of that. But I had a massive... kind of connection yesterday with my babies yesterday before we actually watched the podcast. They knew that it was coming out. They knew that it was going to be online. But we had never watched it together. And it was the first time I actually watched it was yesterday. And wow, it was, that alone was just kind of like, they had more questions to ask me. And we knew that it would get, you know, bring a lot of tears out in us. But just to see the growth of my kids and be open to asking me, because it's a part of their journey. Who am I? You know, and they have all these questions. They know why we're here. They know the reason why their mum at the moment is obviously not here, not connected. They know the background of it. They know the struggles of addiction. They know how, why, they know why people can't control their addictions and why they can't control their thoughts or actions, and it's purely just because we have those open kōrero. So that is that. When it comes into incarceration, some of the questions we got was, how come your mum took you guys to the prisons at such a young age? So your mum kind of opened that up for you guys to go through that journey? And these are all valid questions, and I totally get where people are coming from. So in regards to that, I'm not 100% sure why my mum kind of just thought, okay, it's just what we do. And I can only speak for myself because our mum is no longer here. Because a lot of people were like, oh, was that a good choice of your mother's? And I can only say maybe there was no one else to look after us, which is why we're too young, so she probably just took us along. I don't know if it was that. But me as an adult and as the person I am today, as crazy as this journey has been, you know, us visiting correctional centres, us going to courts, us writing letters to judges, all that kind of stuff as young children, it's probably made my journey today. I am so open. I'm so open, and I, everywhere I go, doesn't matter what kind of situation a person is in, whether they're in full-on addiction, whether they be homeless, whether they be not all there in their own space, I can actually tolerate people like that. And I know a lot of people can't. Yeah. And that's, you know, a lot of people, they just think, and I know it's today, and I probably have done that myself, so I'm not saying that I haven't. I know a lot of people walk past people and they just think, druggies, or, you know, stuff like that. I've had my kids kind of be like that at times, and I've reined it right back in. And I think for me, our mother being so open with that kind of stuff, it's made us understand a lot why people are how they are, and obviously the journeys that they take there.
You know, I've got to say, just even, so my response to what you said, what you asked, was I just find it interesting that someone even asked that, just from my lens.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, to us that was the norm. So someone found that out of character, you know.
I think that's what it is. It was normal for us. So we just thought, oh, well, we're just going along. But like I said, it's these questions, you see it from someone else's lens.
Yeah.
And like I said, I didn't even think about it because I thought, oh, it's actually an interesting question because, you know, as a mum, you're taking your kids on this journey with you. You probably didn't even think about it. But, yeah, like I said, I can't say why she did, and I'm just saying maybe it's because there was no one else to look after us as kids, I don't know. And it was probably normal for her. Maybe that's what it was, I don't know. But that was one that came through. They also had things about, obviously, family courts and systems. Now, let's be real, that's massive. That kind of pātai in itself is massive. You probably could be here all day. But only yesterday when I was... I sat at the table and I had my three babies, and every segment that we went through on the podcast, I would pause it and I would explain to them what this was in regards to, and then obviously my answers. My answers of this has actually come from my kids speaking about it. But it was interesting because from each segment, my kids had questions. What happened when we were born from the hospital? Where did we go? Who did we go to? And then how did we become where we are? And each of our babies, including their older brother, they each had different journeys, but it kind of was the same. But I had never broken it down like I did yesterday, because they had never asked me before. And I had always said, when they become of age to ask me the question, if I have the answer, I would answer it. If not, that's kind of up to our sister to be able to answer those things. But from that, with family systems and stuff like that, each and every one of my kids yesterday asked, what about me? What about me, Mum? Well, where did I go? And I had to start all the way back from our oldest. He's 23, I think. So I had to start back from his journey, and it was a little bit different to the rest. But I started back then... And I won't actually go with his journey because I haven't actually asked him. But I know I can go from our big girl down because I have openly asked them last night. But it's very similar but different. So obviously our big girl, my sister was pregnant whilst incarcerated. So she went into labour while she was incarcerated. And she gave birth at a Western Sydney hospital. Family services were already there because of my sister's situation. And then the call come through to our mum. She had to be there before they had intervened. So I remember our mum going to that hospital as soon as our sister gave birth. She was there. She was in the room. And then mum, obviously, before it got to that stage, she took our big girl from hospital, and that's how that came about. Obviously, the family services were involved because of the situation, but it was, you know, much like today, it was quite, no one quite fast that our sister couldn't raise this child. And it's obviously our oldest and our second one. Our sister was here, there and everywhere. We couldn't really, you know, it's kind of like we needed a GPS to stick on this woman to see where she was. And then it wasn't until our second girl was born again at a Western Sydney hospital, and then we actually got the phone call from family services to say that our sis had given birth, and they were going to remove our second girl from our sister, and we needed to obviously go there to speak with them and obviously do what they asked of us to do. So she didn't actually fall into the system. And I remember I was speaking with them last night. I remember I have a good friend who I kind of threw in the deep end. I was like, sis, can you come and help me look after my other kid? I said, I need to get to this hospital and I need to obviously stop those tracks of the kids going into the system. So I was lucky that she was there on that day, and I went there and obviously I had to do what they needed to do. Each and every kid had been in special nursery, which I spoke about to them yesterday. What is special nursery after the children are born? And each of them had gone through that, you know, through the special. So you get, they're born, they stay with mum for a little bit, and then they're taking them to special care nursery. Then they're like, what do we do there? What happened? And I explained to them, obviously, when people are in addiction, and obviously that feeds into the baby. So it's you go through a withdrawal period. And I explained to them what that is.
I just want to say in 5 minutes, the alarm's going to go off right here. Bit of a drill, but I'm going to go down to the cafe, but so we'll continue on after the radio here.
Yep.
Cool.
Yep. So, so that, and talking about why they go into special care nursery, and I explained to them about the effects of the fetus or of the child when mothers are in addiction, and obviously that feeds into the baby. So it's obviously just making sure the withdrawal period of the child, making sure that they're okay. And then they ask, well, what happens to us? And I remember, I think every single one of them, and I know our oldest boy, he probably was the one that was hit hardest with withdrawals, where they shake, their bodies shake. It's not a nice sight to see. But, hey, it's obviously what they have to go through. So I explained that to them yesterday, and they were kind of like, oh, but why do we, you know, all these questions come up, and that's just normal. So I explained a bit about that, and then obviously coming into us, you know, from the system. Our youngest was a bit different because she was taken from the hospital into foster care.
I just got to say, that morning baby was born, so I got to give a good thanks to my cousin Peds, Uppy, who came with me to the hospital and literally opened the door, and it just happened there, and then I just couldn't deal with it. Te Pere, you're on shift this morning. But yeah, you're just taking me back to being in addiction and there when baby was born, and our mindset that morning.
And then also dealing with one time she was born into some pretty chaotic scenes. I spoke about that with her yesterday, and you know, we because she obviously didn't know. She did hear when her older sisters say different things, but I explained what had happened there. Obviously, that was a different journey for me because we then, you know, had to. I won't actually mention the name. So when that all came about, it was chasing tails because we knew there was no one there to grab her. So it was chasing tails, like, who can I reach out to who'll give me a bit of an upper hand on where we go, what we do? And I did, and I won't mention this person's name because obviously that's, you know, I don't want to put this person in a position, but there was a person that I reached out to, and I explained the situation, and I said, you know, I need help. I need help. I need to get this child. before we literally lose all chances. And there was a whanaunga back home who literally said, you know, this is what you can do. And even though it was a really small bit of information, because obviously there was a lot that she wasn't allowed to say, I just took with that and I kind of just literally just kind of filtered through to where we needed to go to get that done. And that, you know, that alone was a fight. I actually was saying yesterday, and I spoke with our little sister about it, I used to hate having to drive down to Featherston. And even my last trip home just last week, every time I hit that street in Featherston, it just always brings me back to that day where the carer at the time, and I'm glad it was only for a little bit of time, but she would make me park on the side of the road. And that was where I had to meet to put our baby into my car, or from